Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, August 22nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Permian Resources Earthstone Deal Creates $14 Billion Powerhouse, by Mella McEwen. A year ago, the merger of Colgate Energy and Centennial Resources created Permian Resources. Today, another merger is creating a $14 billion Delaware Basin independent producer. Midland's Permian Resources has agreed to acquire Earthstone Energy in an all-stock transaction valued at approximately $4.5 billion. The combination of the two companies will add 223,000 net acres, bringing Permian Resources holdings to more than 400,000 acres, and create what the companies say is a $14 billion Delaware Basin exploration and production company. One of the reasons Permian Resources co-chief executive officers Will Hickey and James Walter are so enthused about the deal is that it's expected to be highly accretive to free cash flow. They estimate it will be accretive by an average of 30% during the next 2 years and then 25% per year during the next 5 and 10 years. Synergies, primarily realized in the back office, are expected to drive about $175 million of annual cash flow improvement, allowing Permian Resources to increase its dividend about 20%. Permian Resources looks to incorporate Earthstone's employees, as well as its acreage. People are such a large part of our business and the primary driver behind any successful E&P, Hickey commented during a call with investors to discuss the deal. We have great respect for what the Earthstone employees have accomplished over the past several years and are excited to welcome them to the Permian Resources team. Andrew Dittmer, director at Enverus Intelligence Research, noted that the deal will give Permian Resources a pro forma market capitalization of about $10 billion, moving the company ahead of peer Matador Resources and Civitas Resources, and make it solidly the third largest, nearly Permian pure play, behind Pioneer Natural Resources and Diamondback Energy. Rather than pursue the common private equity acquisition, Permian Resources is picking up another public company, Dittmer told the Reporter Telegram by email. Given the ramp-up in the valuations in private equity assets over the last year, public company merger and acquisition is starting to look like a more attractive proposition for buyers to build scale versus targeting private equity deals. That is what Permian Resources is accomplishing with its purchase of Earthstone, which looks to be attractively priced relative to the prior private equity deals, including Earthstone's purchase of Novo Oil and Gas. In addition to Earthstone's acquisition of Novo in June, Dittmer noted that the company had also previously acquired Titus Oil and Gas and Chisholm Energy, giving the company 5 to 6 years of drilling inventory that breaks even at less than $50 per barrel of West Texas Intermediate in the Delaware Basin. Dittmer speculated that the Midland Basin assets included in the deal will be a short-term cash cow for the company with limited activity, and long-term, a sale is likely in order to convert the company into a Delaware pure play. The Midland Basin does have high-quality locations, and with just one rig running, enough $50 per barrel break-even locations to sustain around 5 years of drilling, he wrote. It also has over 300 other net locations that break even at higher oil prices. Given the relative paucity of M&A opportunities in the basin, the asset would draw buyer interest, but a sale would also be financially dilutive to the company at current multiples. The companies are operating a total of 11 rigs, primarily focused on the Delaware Basin. The combined entity plans to allocate at least one of Earthstone's two rigs currently active in the Midland Basin to the Delaware. During the next year, the combined company expects to allocate approximately 90% of capital to high-rate-of-return projects in the Delaware Basin, predominantly focused on Lee, Eddy, Reeves, and Ward counties. The remaining 10% will be allocated to the Midland Basin, with one rig operating on oily acreage in Midland and Reagan counties. This article is entitled City Reports Increase in Potholes Filled by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The city of Midland has filled 64.59% more potholes through the first 6 months of 2023 compared to the total during the same period in 2022. The city reported this week having filled 7,173 potholes through June. That total was 2,800 more than through the first 6 months of 2022, 4,358. The increase might come as a surprise considering the lack of rain during the first part of both years. The National Weather Service reported 1.46 inches of precipitation in 2023 and 2.20 inches through June in 2022. The NWS reported 4.06 inches in August 2022 and more than 6 inches from August through October. Interestingly, the city reported repairing 12.6% more potholes in August through October than it did during the first 6 months of the year, 4,908 to 4,358. The city of Midland reported filling 13,146 potholes during the entire 2022 calendar year. Coincidentally, the Midland City Council will be asked to approve the purchase of a pothole patcher for the purchase amount of $214,950 on Tuesday's agenda. Contact the city about a pothole. Pothole hotline / request street maintenance, 432-685-7293, 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Online, midlandtexas.gov/223/streets-traffic. This article is entitled Council to Consider Beale Park Renovation Specifics by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council will look at approving Beale Park renovation specifications on Tuesday at its regular meeting, which is slated to begin at 10 a.m. The council wants to turn Beale Park in Southwest Midland into the community's soccer complex. The construction of dozens of fields, 2,041 parking spaces, 15 spaces for RVs, 3 restroom/concession areas, and an amphitheater area in the middle of the park will be broken up into 4 phases, and the opinion of probable construction costs totaled $35.79 million. The firm ultimately selected will evaluate the Beale Park master plan and identified phases, analyze, adjust cost estimates for the identified phases, prepare Phase 1 construction documents, work with the city to prepare bid documents for Phase 1, prepare Phases 2, 3, and 4 construction documents. The City of Midland reported that a professional service agreement for the Beale Park development and project management would be executed in October 2023. Completion of the construction documents would happen by February 2024. The construction of Phase 1 of the project would commence in May 2024, with completion in time for the spring 2025 soccer season. Funding for the project will be from the park's special purpose account. Another sports complex expense. The Midland City Council will have the opportunity to approve a contract with a Dallas company for the renovation of the infield at Momentum Bank Ballpark for a total cost of $177,338.35. The existing infield turf at Momentum Bank Ballpark needs replacement, the city reported. The Major League Baseball inspection completed this summer identified areas in the field that do not meet the requirements for grading. So laser grading will be completed prior to the installation of the Latitude 36 Sports Hybrid Bermuda sod. 5 inches of infield surface will be removed in order to complete the necessary work. In order to begin work as soon as possible and have installation completed for use during the spring 2024 baseball season, staff recommends the purchase of the sod from Sports Fields Solutions. This article is entitled DPS, Midlander Among Three Dead After Collision in Andrews County, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Three people are dead, including a Midlander, after a collision Sunday morning in Andrews County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that a 2012 Ford F-250 towing a horse trailer was traveling southbound on Farm to Market Road 1788 and veered into the northbound lane and struck a 2021 Ford F-250. The collision happened 10 miles north of Gardendale. The drivers of both vehicles and a passenger in the 2021 Ford F-250 were pronounced deceased at the scene, according to DPS. The driver of the 2012 Ford F-250 towing a horse trailer was Leopoldo Areola, 40, of Midland. He was not wearing a seatbelt. Two minors from Midland were also in the 2012 Ford F-250. They were taken to Midland Memorial Hospital in stable condition. Both were wearing a seatbelt. Alfredo Cuellar, 21, of Laredo, was driving the 2021 Ford F-250. Arnaldo Torres, 21, of San Antonio, also passed away, according to the DPS. Cuellar was wearing a seatbelt. Torres was not. This crash took place around 3:17 a.m., according to the DPS. It remains under investigation. This article is entitled, Here Come Cooler Temps. There is also a chance of rain, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The National Weather Service is expecting a reprieve from what is currently the hottest month in Midland's history. The NWS is calling for high temperatures of 95 degrees on Tuesday and 94 degrees on Wednesday at Midland International Airport. There also is a chance of precipitation both days, up to 40% on Tuesday and 30% on Wednesday. The cooler high temperatures are a change of pace for Midland. The National Weather Service reported Monday that the average high in August had been 102.6 degrees through Sunday, and the average temperature, 89.9 degrees, has August on pace to become the hottest month in Midland's recorded history. Monday's report. Monday's high, 100 degrees. Typical high for August 21st, 94 degrees. Monday's low, 72 degrees. Typical low for August 21st, 71 degrees. Previous record high for August 21st, 102 degrees, set in 1964. Last 3 days, Saturday, 101 degrees, Sunday, 99 degrees, Monday, 100 degrees. Next 3 days, Tuesday, 95 degrees, Wednesday, 94 degrees, Thursday, 97 degrees. Chance of rain. Tuesday, 40% chance. Wednesday, 30% chance. Weather by the numbers. Most 100-degree days total in Midland. 2011, 65. 1964, 52. 2023, 51. 1998, 51. 2020, 47. And 1977, 43. 100-degree days by month in Midland. June, 17. July 17, August 17. The source of this article, the National Weather Service. This article is entitled, Howard Speaks to Midland Youth Coalition. Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard speaks during the Midland Youth Coalition meeting on Monday at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. What is the Midland Youth Coalition? The coalition is open to all community members, meets every third Monday, and features lunch and multiple guest speakers. The coalition seeks to unite and inform the different educational advocacy groups on current happenings within Midland School District and identify areas to assist. This article is entitled, MISD Increases Offerings in Career and Technical Education, by the Midland ISD. The Career and Technical Education Program at Midland ISD offers an array of 27 programs encompassing 121 individual classes, positioning students for prosperous futures in both higher education and thriving careers. During the 2022-23 academic year, more than 5,400 of the 7,185 students in grades 9 through 12 were enrolled in a CTE course. Of those, the number of students completing an industry-based certificate across MISD's five high schools increased more than 200% compared to the prior year. The IBCs attained by these students stand as tangible proof of their mastery in industry-specific skills, effectively validated against university-recognized industry benchmarks. This accomplishment highlights not only the students' dedication, but also the district's commitment to fostering job-ready skills in our students. MISD offers a comprehensive selection of programs, each tailored to specific career clusters. Programs of study include Accounting and Financial Services, Advanced Manufacturing and Machinery, Animal Science, Automotive Technology, Automotive Paint and Body, Business Management, Dual Credit, Business Management, Non-Dual, Cosmetology, Cybersecurity, Culinary Arts, Diesel and Heavy Equipment, Digital Communications, Emergency Services, Engineering, Engineering CADD, Dual Credit, Graphic Design and Multimedia Arts, Healthcare Patient Care Technician, Healthcare EMT, Healthcare Pharmacy Technician, HVAC and Sheet Metal, Firefighter, Law Enforcement, Lodging and Resort Management, Oil and Gas Exploration and Production, Plant Science, Teaching and Training, Welding. Beginning this school year, students have the opportunity to participate in a new plant science program. This new pathway includes turf grass management and landscape design management courses. Courses will include greenhouse operations and production. These courses provide a hands-on learning experience that melds creativity with technical expertise, preparing students for careers in landscape architecture, greenhouse operations, floral design, and turf management. MISD will partner with Midland College to provide dual credit programming in state-of-the-art facilities that provide an even greater opportunity for hands-on learning experiences. These spaces enable students to practice skills in environments mirroring their intended careers. For example, health sciences facilities feature hospital beds and medical equipment available for students studying in nursing, EKG, and phlebotomy. Welding facilities allow students to safely train using welding equipment, while oil and gas exploration utilizes tools such as programmable logic controllers and mechatronics. In these real-world work settings, students also have the opportunity to collaborate alongside professionals in the field. This ensures graduates are prepared to meet the workforce needs in the region. The program has fostered unique partnerships across various fields, such as collaborating with the local restaurant association for culinary arts and teaming with Warren Cat for diesel technology. CTE is a critical component of the district's efforts towards college, career, and military readiness. Parents can access the CCMR Parent Guide for additional information about requirements. This article is entitled MPD Discovers Cordarius' Identity, Arrests Mother, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland Police announced Monday that officials have discovered the identity of the individual known as Cordarius. The ongoing investigation revealed the individual as 24-year-old Cordarius Lashoon Peggs of Midland. Charlotte Latasha Peggs, 47, of Midland, the mother of Cordarius, was arrested for exploitation of a disabled individual. The residents of Midland, along with the abundance of concern for Cordarius nationwide, assisted officials involved with the case in identifying Cordarius, MPD reported. Officials with the City of Midland, the Midland Police Department, and all agencies involved would like to thank everyone for their overwhelming support and help. A special thank you to the news media in helping to elevate the story of Cordarius to a national level. The investigation continues. This article is entitled What to Know About the Midland County Fair by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Rodeo 101, petting zoos, and a carnival. Just a few things on display this weekend at the 14th Annual Midland County Fair, running Thursday through Sunday. Known as Midland's largest event, the county fair has grown every year since inception, according to Executive Director Casey Kelly. This year proves no exception, with quite a few entertainment-based additions. We have Tejano Sunday, a lot of live performances throughout the venue, mutton busting, which everybody's been wanting us to bring, a wrestling show, a dog show with all rescue dogs, pig racing, and we're also doing a lamb and goat show this year, Kelly explained. Tejano Sunday also includes a Charreta Extravaganza VIP experience with premium seats to concerts, mouth-watering Mexican cuisine, and refreshing beverages. Tickets cost $50, and festivities begin at 3 p.m. Sunday. Other West Texas classics include a chili cook-off, hot dog eating competition, and pie baking contest. Community favorites include the Chase Quine Memorial Bull Ride, Hope Fest, Food Truck Alley, and more. We want to be true to our roots, so we also wanted to make sure that we added some additional agricultural things, Kelly said. The county fair will be running its app again this year. Here, guests can find detailed schedules of performances and opening closing times of other events. The app is free to download and can be accessed at app-midlandcofair.com. A minimized schedule of each day can be found at midlandcofair.com. For those wanting to participate in the carnival, wristbands for Thursday night cost $25, while Friday and Saturday wristbands will cost $35. The carnival will be open until midnight, Thursday through Saturday. Entry into the fair will cost $5 all day Thursday, 5 to 10 p.m., and from 3 to 5 p.m. Friday. Running from 5 to 10 p.m. Friday, entry will also cost $10. All events will be held at the Horseshoe, 2514 Arena Trail. This column is called Opinion. It is entitled, How Well Do You Know Your Permian Basin Realtor? By Carrie McNeil, Permian Basin Board of Realtors. So, you think you know your realtor? Let's start with what we all know first. A realtor is known for assisting their clients in selling or purchasing residential and commercial properties. We navigate our clients through many milestones in their lives, such as newlyweds buying their first home, empty nesters downsizing, investors buying those flips, or children closing out parents' estates. In order for realtors to become their very best, we become a fountain of knowledge, or the pulse of our communities. I prefer the term miniature village experts. In order to achieve such a mighty task, you will find us everywhere, volunteering in numerous nonprofit organizations, foundations, and churches. We participate in local governmental meetings such as city council, school board, and appraisal district meetings. Heck, you may even hear us on the radio talking about economic development or interest rates. Now, let's talk about a few things that you may not know. The National Association of Realtors was created in 1908 and currently possesses 1.5 million members. Texas Realtors was founded in 1920 and possesses 155,000 members. In typical Texas fashion, we go big. Texas Realtors make up about 10% of the nation's realtors. We hold ourselves accountable to one of the most stringent ethical canons and are one of the top three professions to vote in elections. As diligent voters, we are in tune with the needs and wants of Midlanders and Texans, and that work starts at the local level. Permian Basin Board of Realtors currently commands 852 active members, with a focus on advocacy of property owners and the empowerment of home ownership. Quite a few of us have taken that passion and have stepped up to serve on the state and national levels. Upon entering these higher levels of leadership, we shift our focus to a myriad of things such as fair housing, broadband services, public land usage, water rights, and property taxation. In short, being a realtor is more than just opening doors, looking at cool houses, commercial spaces, and selling a property. It is more than just billboards, signs, and TikToks. It is about you. We are the juggernaut that fights for your private property rights at the state and national level. It is not about red or blue. It is a purple solution for all those in the great state of Texas.
This is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, August 22nd. PHS goes into lockdown over hoax. Permian High School, 1800 East 42nd Street, went into lockdown about 2 p.m. Monday after a report of someone on campus with a weapon. However, it turned out to be a hoax. Odessa Police, Ector County Sheriff's Office, and the Texas Department of Public Safety responded in force. University of Texas Permian Basin Dispatch received a 911 phone call stating there was an active shooter at Permian High School. UTPB notified all law enforcement agencies in this area and all responded to PHS. Upon receiving the call, ECISD police placed the school in lockdown, an emergency response in which all people inside the school take shelter within a locked room and all campus activities stop. All safety procedures were followed and the officers were able to clear the school of any threat, deem it safe, and release the lockdown. Law enforcement confirmed there was no shooter at Permian and there were no shots fired at the school, which was a claim made by the 911 caller a news release detailed. The next steps will include an investigation to attempt to identify the caller who made the false statements. We have learned at least two other school districts in West Texas experienced some type of phone threat, and those were confirmed as hoaxes as well, the release stated. We want to thank our students and staff for their quick, focused response to this situation. We want to applaud our law enforcement agencies for their response and their determination to keep our schools and our community safe. And we want to thank PHS parents who, being worried for their children, remained patient as the campus was cleared and the district was able to report back to them that all was safe, the release said. Parents came to the campus worried about their children, and students who were on their way back to class stayed outside, but many of the school's more than 4,000 students were still inside. Chief Communications Officer Mike Atkins said, "There was early dismissal Monday. They did a regular class change and then ran dismissal as usual," Atkins said. Many of those outside said they weren't told anything except that there was someone on campus with a gun. Junior Ahim Kelly said he and some other students were about to go back to class but were told to stay outside. He said most people were inside. He said he was more confused than afraid because it pretty much came out of nowhere. Sarah Govia, the mother of a PHS senior, said she came all the way from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center downtown to Permian because she was really worried. Govia said her son didn't answer his phone and she guessed they weren't allowed to use them. Esalani Juarez, a freshman, said she was scared and called her mom. "She already knows. I texted her," Juarez said. A similar incident took place last year, but it was a hoax. In August 2022, an Odessa Police Department release detailed that this caused a large police presence at the school by various law enforcement agencies. A juvenile male was detained and found to be in possession of a firearm, but there were no reported injuries or damage, the release said. According to a message sent by parents, law enforcement was releasing students room by room. It asked parents to be patient as your student safety is our top priority. Cates. Drug overdoses in 2022 hit record highs. When I was a young nurse working in the emergency department and I heard about a person who had died or was unconscious, my first thought was always trauma. Things like car wrecks, falls from a height, and motorcycle accidents. As much as I hate trauma, I wish that was where my mind still went, but it's not. Now when I hear about a person who has died or is unconscious, my first thought is drug overdose. Drug overdoses are becoming far, far too common. In 2022, nearly 110,000 people died from drug overdose in the U.S. That is more deaths related to drug overdose than any other year since we started tracking it as a cause of death. The change in my thought process regarding unconscious people has been driven by that increase in overdose deaths and because of the way we are now expected to react as healthcare providers because of that increase. It is now standard of care when someone is found unconscious and we are not 100% sure why. We give the antidote for opiate overdoses, Narcan, immediately. I cannot say how very sad it makes me that to do everything possible to save someone's life, we must include treatments for overdose, even when we have no reason to suspect drug use. The 110,000 deaths in 2022 is not the only scary statistic when it comes to drug overdose. In a recent survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation, KFF, more than 25% of respondents stated that they or a member of their family has been addicted to prescription painkillers or other illegal opioid drugs. The same survey found that 1 in 10 people has had a family member die of a drug overdose. The main culprit, according to experts, in the number of drug overdose deaths is fentanyl. Fentanyl and other synthetic opioids account for more than 2/3 of the overdose deaths in 2022. I don't know if the average person truly understands how powerful of an opioid fentanyl is. Most of the drugs that we take normally are dosed in milligrams. For instance, an extra-strength tablet of acetaminophen, Tylenol, is 500 mg. There are 1,000 milligrams in a gram. The standard paperclip weighs about a gram. That means 500 mg is about half of a paperclip in size. I can see that. I can hold that in my hand. I can compare it to other things, but fentanyl isn't like that. In hospitals, because it is so very powerful, fentanyl is not dosed in milligrams, it is dosed in micrograms. A microgram is 1/1,000,000th of a gram. A common dose of fentanyl is about 100 micrograms. Essentially, that equates to cutting that 1 gram paperclip into 100,000 pieces and picking out just one of those pieces. There is no way you can see that or hold it in your hand. In hospitals, there are multiple safety layers from the manufacturers to the way we administer fentanyl to make sure we are giving those very tiny amounts accurately and safely. But when fentanyl is gotten from illegal sources, those safety measures don't exist, and there is no way to know if what a person thinks they are taking is really what they are getting. That is a big part of why fentanyl causes overdoses so easily. Add into the problem that fentanyl is getting mixed into other drugs. We are also seeing overdoses in people who had no idea they were even taking fentanyl. The KFF survey also asked about concerns regarding substance abuse and addiction. 1/3 of the respondents stated they are worried someone in their family will overdose on opioids, and 40% are worried that someone in their family will unintentionally consume fentanyl. 2/3 of the respondents say they have had someone in their family who was addicted to drugs or alcohol, has experienced homelessness due to addiction, or experienced a drug overdose that led to an emergency department visit, hospitalization, or death. The respondents who said they had experienced addiction in their family also stated that addiction had major impacts on their mental health, relationships within the family, and on the family's finances. I don't have the answers to the drug overdose problem. It's a huge national problem with a massive number of issues that contribute. What I do know is that this is not a them problem. This is an us problem. Every single person has a distinct possibility of having a substance abuse and addiction problem among their loved ones. We have an absolute obligation to talk to our loved ones about the dangers of drugs and substance abuse. We must work on healthy ways to cope in times of stress, and we can't hold to stigmas about mental health that force people to self-medicate with street drugs rather than getting treatment. We must, because with some of these drugs, like fentanyl, all it takes is one try, one experiment, one bad decision, and that person is addicted or they are dead. I also encourage everyone possible to carry Narcan, the antidote to opiates. The sooner a person who has overdosed on an opiate receives Narcan, the less likely they are to die or have severe complications from that overdose. Narcan is now available over-the-counter as a nasal spray, so it is easy to get and easy to give if you suspect a drug overdose. CVS and Walgreens both advertise they have Narcan in stock, and I am sure other pharmacies carry as well. I also am advising that you check with your insurance carrier to see if they help cover the costs of Narcan. I like to think of Narcan as a fire extinguisher. You never want to use one, but you always want to have one around because having it can save a life. Odessan arrested on child porn charge. An Odessa man was arrested Thursday after authorities said they found 66 child pornography images and videos on a phone he temporarily had in his possession. According to an Odessa Police Department report, Luis Angel Garcia, 25, was provided a Samsung cell phone in mid-June, and when he failed to pay for it, the owner took it back a couple of weeks later. When going through the phone, the woman told police she found multiple child porn images in Garcia's iCloud gallery, the report stated. Detectives obtained search warrants for the cell phone and found images and videos of babies, toddlers, and teens engaged in sexual conduct, according to the report. Garcia is facing one second-degree felony charge of possession with intent to promote child pornography and remains in the Ector County Jail on a $50,000 surety bond. County holding tax rate hearing Tuesday. Ector County Commissioners will meet 10 a.m. Tuesday at the County Annex to discuss, among other items, a new agricultural extension agent, the coming year's holiday and meeting schedule, and the proposed county tax rate. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said the proposed tax rate is $0.35, which is the same as last year's rate and slightly above the no new revenue rate. A hearing on the tax rate is also scheduled during the meeting. He said the county will bring in more in property tax revenue, and that will help set the county up for long-term success. The health of our county government is important, Fawcett said Monday. He added that the court has put together a heck of a budget, and that includes some items that will actually help the financial health of Ector County. Pay raises of 20% of the jailers at the Ector County Detention Center and raises for the district attorney's office are strategic and much warranted, he said. Currently, the jail has to send some inmates out of county due to being short-staffed. That is an expensive proposition for the county, and the ability to both hire and retain jailers will mean less money spent on shipping inmates to other places, he said. Countywide, most employees will see a 2% increase under the proposed rate, he added. He said law enforcement is getting between 5 and 12% for sheriff deputies. It depends on the years of experience, and our main goal with this budget is strategic raises to get law enforcement up to a correct amount. He said some health department employees will get strategic raises as well, so the county does not have to use temp agencies, which, like sending inmates out of county, are more costly. The district attorney's office will also see strategic raises to address vacancies. Fawcett said recent state legislation will help Ector County with both the law enforcement and the DA raises. A bill passed that will reimburse counties $500,000 for sheriff staff and $250,000 for DA staff, and that money becomes available January 1st. And we will apply for that guaranteed funding, Fawcett added, saying the funding is for rural counties under 300,000 people. Fawcett said a few more boxes needed to be checked before the vote on the rate, and the budget and the tax rate won't be officially approved until the court's next meeting in 2 weeks on September 5th. This is the proposed rate, and that doesn't mean after Tuesday's vote that it will be the tax rate, but the no new revenue rate would not have set the county up for success. There are things that we need to do as a county, Fawcett said, pointing out that the need for a new library as well as a countywide staffing issues and the courthouse issues. He said the county also is saving some funds, $2 million on the repairs of West 42nd Street after discussions with the CRMWD. We saved that just by talking with the CRMWD about the construction, he added. He said the new budget is passed. We'll also fund a grant writing position to help the county seek grant funding for various projects. We are hoping for grant writer with legal experience to go get some money, and the position will pay for itself. During the Tuesday meeting, the county will also discuss a $500 donation from T-Mobile for the Ector County Health Department. This donation was given for the purchase of school supplies and backpacks during the back-to-school clinics. Discuss the commissioner's court schedule for the 2023-2024 term. Discuss the Ector County holiday schedule for the 2023-2024 term. Hold a tax rate public hearing. Discuss the 2023-2024 budget public hearing at 10 a.m. September 5th. Hold a public hearing, and consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding an application by Swift Air Solar, LLC, for a proposed designation as a reinvestment zone, an application for tax abatement under Chapter 312 of the Texas Tax Code, for use as a solar power facilities by Swift Air Solar, LLC, located southeast of the city of Pinwell in Ector County, Texas, and to take any necessary action regarding approval of adoptions of resolutions and the tax abatement agreement with Swift Air Solar. Discuss architectural services agreement with JSA Architects to provide site master plan options for Kellis Turner Park in an amount not to exceed $12,000. Discuss a change order number 1 for the 42nd Street Project, Colorado River Municipal Water District, CRMWD, has confirmed that the concrete pad in the contract is no longer required, and some items on the contract will be done in-house by the Public Works Department. The adjustment in this change order will reduce the total contract by $2,256,965. Discuss the Hudspeth County Interlocal Agreement to approve the Inmate Housing Interlocal Agreement between Ector County and Hudspeth County, including increases in the per diem rate per inmate. Discuss the Hillmont Estates Streetlights Agreement specifications with developer Ron Chestnut about streetlights, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. OHS senior makes Crime Stoppers history. Odessa High School senior Cooper Aranda made a little bit of history recently, being named the first student advisor to the Texas Crime Stoppers Council. Aranda, a 17-year-old senior, was recently sworn in by 70th District Court Judge Den Wallen. He was joined by friends, family, and the Crime Stoppers program leaders for the ceremony. He has been in Crime Stoppers since he was in sixth grade. Aranda said he got interested in Crime Stoppers after meeting Damon McGilvery, who was the Crockett Middle School officer at the time. He told me what the program was about, and I figured I'd give it a shot. And then seeing the difference that Crime Stoppers makes in the community, Aranda said. I think that really reeled me in was when I did our first Blue Santa during Christmas time, where we go to Walmart and we buy toys, clothes, and shoes for the kids that are in need, or families that are in need, and right before Christmas break, we go deliver those presents. I think that's what really got me into it, because seeing all those happy faces and seeing the kids so excited when they got a new bike or some shoes or a toy that they wanted, it was really heartwarming, he added. Aranda was chosen as a Crime Stoppers ambassador at the beginning of 8th grade. That process entails an interview. our conference was here in Odessa at the Marriott, you had to fill out a paper with questions: why you should be an ambassador, what Crime Stoppers means to you, different questions like that, he said. When, if you were selected from that paper, then you go get a physical interview on about like the second day of the conference or something like that in the morning. There's a board of, I think, 8 people. They ask you questions, Aranda said. He thinks about 14 applied, but only 4 were selected to fill the spots of people who were graduating. It was really exciting. I didn't know what to expect. They prepare me for like, hey, you're young. They might not select you. Just all depends on how your interview goes, how the selection process goes. It was really surprising when I got it because some people had to try multiple times to get in. It's pretty surprising. But I was very grateful, Aranda said. His new position is student advisor to the state board. He meets virtually with the board and they discuss budgets and other items. Basically, I'm there to voice an opinion on the student level on matters that they need advice on. I'm basically the bridge of communication between the students and the board. That way, there's a clear line of communication there on what the students are asking for, what they need, what they want, they think about things that we've implemented on our campus, stuff like that, he said. Aranda said he's not sure how often the board meets. He added that he has no idea the process of picking a student advisor has happening. A background check was conducted and they spoke to people who knew him. They called him at the end of June or the beginning of July and asked if the advisor role was something he would be interested in. Aranda is also president of the ECISD Crime Stoppers program. He said he's not sure if he'll pursue law enforcement. I'm working really hard in high school to see if I can have multiple options for something and see what I'm really interested in, Aranda added. He said he knows many of the law enforcement officers, particularly the ECISD police, because of Crime Stoppers. Aranda said his mom, ECISD Director of Administrative Services, Maribel Aranda, is really proud of him, and that is a huge honor, especially because the first one in history, that's a crazy concept in my mind. But I know that she's really proud of me, and that she knows how hard I work, and definitely she knows that it's a big responsibility, and she knows that I can handle it, Aranda said. He has an older sister who turned 20 August 15th. Aranda said he's interested in the laws put in place, especially on campuses, to keep kids out of harm's way, whether that be drug laws, gun laws, threats, or cyberbullying. It's really cool to see the process of how that works. Like in Austin, we got to go to the PD there. We got to see their cyber team. And that was pretty cool, seeing how, like, the process, if someone gets threatened online and how they work through that. And also probably like how our anonymous tipping works, our app or our hotline or our website. How quick that process is, where you get a tip and an officer immediately responds to it and they start doing their investigation. They start calling people, seeing what happened, getting advice together, Aranda said. The Crime Stoppers hotline and mobile app revolves around anonymity. You'll never have to reveal your identity. You'll always be confidential no matter what, Aranda said. He added that this is a pretty good concept because you know how kids can be. If they find out who it was you, they'll go crazy. So it's a pretty cool thing that you can be completely anonymous. You can do it on your phone without anyone looking, Aranda said. He added that people should definitely join Crime Stoppers. It's an incredible program, one that can give you many opportunities in life. You'll get to meet some incredible people and make some really good relationships with others. You always have a smile on your face seeing the difference that you make, seeing the behind-the-scenes stuff of what and how we keep our campuses safe, and not just our campuses, but our community as well, Aranda said. Odessa High School principal Anthony Garcia said Aranda's selection is rewarding. I think it's exciting for Odessa High School as well as ECISD having a student representative represent Odessa, Texas, Garcia said. Cooper is an exceptional student with many talents. This just being one of his talents that he's here to be a voice for students as well as our community, he added.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.